Chapter 22. Even without a co-pilot, Mara could call on most of Jade Shadow's capabilities. Lando's techs had installed pilot-controlled AG-1G lasers, nearly as powerful as the AG-2Gs he'd put on the Millennium Falcon years ago, plus a full KDY shielding suite. Shada had shown up with a gift from Talon Card, two Dimex HM-8 torp launchers. Mara hadn't asked the former Mistral Shadow Guard where they came from. She'd simply specified that they, too, had to be pilot-accessible. Now, just so long as nothing went wrong with life support, which she would need a third arm to reach, she was almost as single-handedly capable as Luke and Anakin in their XJ X-Wings. She'd dropped Anakin at his ship, down near the pole. Now she keyed her heads-up display to paint him and Luke silver-blue. In the distance, beyond Orome's death throes, Luke turned tightly to take one more strafing run at the monster coiled around it. Sharply tapered forward from its tandem power core and drive unit, Shadow flew almost as smoothly as Jade's fire, if not quite as nimbly as the X-Wings. Mara clenched stick and throttle, diving into atmosphere again. Down in the opaque goop, her port and starboard visual scanners were useless. Long-range sensors, mounted just below her heads up, showed a trio of mismatched but aerodynamic craft rising to meet her. Duro Defense Force already had been driven back to defend the other orbital cities, and their few B-wings had flown straight into the enemy's attack wing and been shot to pieces. Nimbler DDF E-wings and local Dagger D police ships harried the landing force's coral skipper escorts, but plainly this small Yuuzhan Vong force meant only to establish a beachhead, too quickly for Gateway to evacuate. Now the dome dwellers were hostages. As Mara closed with the skips, she eyed her long-range scanners. About 30 degrees across Duro's surface, a convoy of 3 freighters and a dozen smaller craft popped free of the toxic clouds and dashed for open space. A tetra formation of coral skippers blasted toward it. "I'm there," Anakin announced. One of the silver-blue pips on her screen headed toward the convoy. Her own trio of skips came straight at her, firing molten projectiles and streams of blinding plasma. Lando's new service droids had fitted Shadow with a stutter trigger, and Mara targeted the lead craft as they came on, weakening its Dovin basal defense as well as she could. "Luke," she called, pulling back on her stick and setting an evasive roll as she pulled for black space. Twin ion drives responded smoothly. "Want to lend a hand here?" "On my way," he came back. She had time for only a fast glance at her long-range scanner. The silver-blue pip streaked away from Orome, headed straight for her. The shadow shivered slightly with unevenly absorbed energy. Mara juked into a rising reversal, then snap-turned to port, and was rewarded with a broadside shot at one coral skipper. Again she pounded its shielding, decelerating and rotating simultaneously, keeping that one skip dead in her sights. Her brackets went live around it, a dead lock-on. But she wouldn't waste a torp until... Not this pass. The enemy pilot's friends were headed back, almost in range. High behind them, where they couldn't see him, Luke swooped into position. She knew exactly what he wanted from her. Playing her etheric rudder, she set a spinning dive. The coral skippers followed like hungry Minox. One hard turn to starboard put them squarely in Luke's sights. His X-Wing pounded the lead skip. The second broke off. Mara jinked hard, came back, and put the torp right where she wanted it. Multicolored coral sprayed in all directions. Luke had taken up position on another skip's tail. The coral skipper decelerated hard, a maneuver guaranteed to make an inexperienced pilot overshoot, putting him precisely in the enemy's sights. That X-Wing pilot was anything but inexperienced. "Cut speed, R2, Mara heard on the private frequency, and the X-Wing came to a relative standstill, still in killing position behind the coral skipper. His lasers showered it with deadly firepower. Mara vaped it with a second missile. At that instant, her threat board went red. Coral skipper's weapons didn't set off torpedo lock alarms, so she had only a moment's warning. She slammed the throttle forward, pushed down on her stick, and danced on the rudders. "Got him," Luke announced, and Mara came about as the last coral skipper was jetting off toward open space.
"How'd you do that?" she demanded.
"He must have been chasing you on full power. That would distract Adovin Basil just as badly as projecting full shields. I think," he added. "Where did they come from?"
"I was headed for Gateway, hoping to give Leia time to get some more evac ships headed out."
"Leia's gone into hiding," Luke told her. "We can't do her any more good here. Yet. She needs time to get people on board."
"Ask her if it'd help if we keep the landing party looking up, instead of searching for her."
While she waited, another voice gargled out of her comm unit.
"All forces, this is Admiral Watt. You have been ordered to disengage and withdraw. Non-compliance will result in immediate disciplinary action."
She'd set her transceiver to listen broadband, even though she was transmitting only on private frequency. That order confirmed what Duros squadron leaders had been calling.
"They're out of their minds," she growled.
"No," Luke came back. "I mean, yes, you're right. But Leia wants us to hold back a little longer. She thinks she's got a better chance of getting her refugees away if the Yuuzhan Vong don't know we're still hanging around."
"All that through the Force, Luke?"
she challenged him. "Not with words, exactly. I'm interpreting a little."
"Still, sounds reasonable."
Their furball with the coral skippers had sent her on a vector toward Orom. The monstrous Yuuzhan Vong creature had attached itself to one docking area. As Mara watched, it appeared to break off another vast hunk of superstructure with its wedge-shaped head. It shook that vigorously, let go, and then darted back and forth, gobbling up whatever it had flung into space. She keyed her sensors for a tight beam view.
"Looks like the creature's got some kind of pouch clinging to its dorsal area," she said. "Maybe life support over a blowhole."
"All forces," the static-charged voice repeated, "stand down. We have been threatened with a second strike if we do not disengage."
"Stang,"
Mara whispered. Luke murmured back. What swallowed it? The threat of further attack. The promise that they only want the planet. He's going to settle for a stalemate. "I'm reading a deactivation order on everything that gets docked." Mara felt her eyes widen. Full deactivation would drain off the ship's power and send their pilots and even their crews home.
"They're not even going to try to help Gateway evacuate. And now our people are prisoners down there."
She pushed the shadow's sharp nose back down. Then she changed her mind. Gateway's fragile dome protected several thousand refugees from corrosive atmosphere, and she'd seen the invaders' biotechnical breathing apparatuses. One ill-planned attack, even by three Jedi, coordinating their strike through the Force, and the refugees would suffer, while their captors were only inconvenienced. She'd had a run of unbreakable situations lately. She'd never been so frustrated. And they've got their beachhead. Luke echoed her thoughts. "But that's the low ground. We're still holding the height."
"Which makes sense," Mara pointed out. "Only if they think they've got an even better vantage."
"If they've got more ships coming in."
"Exactly."
"Leia'd better hurry." His words, her thoughts. "Maybe Hamner will get us reinforcements here in time."
"Luke," she muttered, "with Phalia in charge, it could take another week."
On her heads-up display, one dark blue blip slowly shrank in the distance.
It had been one of Leia's freighters, loaded with refugees. Her scanners showed 6 breaches along its port side. It spun slowly as atmosphere and debris vented into space. Leia would need the Duro's full support the moment she got her other evac ships loaded, and before the Yuuzhan Vong's second force arrived, before their groundside force figured out what Leia was up to and smashed the last evac ships. Mara wondered if she could talk sense into Admiral Derez Watt. If she didn't feel any duplicity in him, she could tell him, quietly, without tipping off the traitors, that he had reinforcements on the way. If she docked the shadow, though, she ran the risk that some bantha-brained idiot would power it down. In the distance, Anakin picked off a second coral skipper as the convoy accelerated toward hyperspace.
"X-Wing, stand down!"
Mara's comm unit growled. She slapped it off. Luke came alongside her, setting a slow arc toward Buru. Corduro and the Peace Brigade have Watt in a tight spot.
Watt can't honestly believe they only want the planet, can he? Either he's a traitor too, or... Well, somebody's got to get that stand-down canceled. I'll try, on Jaina's behalf. She said he'd shown her some sympathy, but I don't want to get marooned.
I could dock in your hold again.
Then stay aboard in dock? Mara asked. Take off if you have to? Come back to fly cover for me if you can?
I don't like that much either.
But they had to do something. I'll talk to him, she decided. If they feel threatened by Jedi, you're the ultimate threat. But I'll tell him not to give up, that reinforcements are coming.
We haven't heard back from Hamner.
So we don't know if he's been turned down, she pointed out.
She vectored away from Buru, putting the widest possible angle between any hostile eyes and her shadow. They didn't know she could carry an X-Wing, and she wanted to keep that little secret. Luke tight-docked the fighter, offloaded R2-D2, then made his way to the triangular cockpit. By then, she had Buru on visual.
"Port Duggan," she transmitted. "Request permission to dock."
"Any further discussion?"
Borsk Failia's violet eyes shone vindictively. No one else at the table spoke.
"Your vote, then."
Kent Hamner remained at attention, but he had less hope than ever. Senator Shesh of Kuat had spoken persuasively, regretfully, citing excellent reasons not to pull a single fighter off any of the other shipyard systems. Counselor Pwo of Mon Calamari reminded the council that others, notably the Hutt, Rhonda Bassadi Diori, had recently called in false alerts from Duro. As he feared, the vote went against him. He kept his shoulders at a dignified brace.
"I will notify Master Skywalker," he said. "But you'd better remember this day. All of you. If Coruscant falls to Yuuzhan Vong forces based on Duro, you will regret this decision."
He pivoted on one heel and left the chamber.
"This way!" Jason shouted.
"Get to the admin building," Leia called behind him.
He shouted back over his shoulder.
"No! Dad's got a tunnel started!"
Jaina pounded along beside him. Evening had fallen, but the overhead lamps stayed on, probably an emergency measure. Leia followed with Olmok and several others up a lane in the deserted Teyana district. As they approached the tallest ruin, Jason glanced back. Dark figures swarmed in through the main gate.
"This way!"
Jason led to the far side of the rubble pile. Inside the tumble-down building, Droma's furry, mustachioed face peered out, his blue and red cap still perched at a rakish angle. He waved a bristly arm. Jason dashed forward, glad that Droma had held out until the quarantine was canceled. His next thought, he hoped all that shaving and isolation really had been pointless, and that no one would carry the White Eyes off-planet on an evacuation ship.
At the rubble pile's edge, Gina tripped and went down, scraping her hands and knees. Jason helped her back to her feet.
"I'm all right," she insisted.
She scrambled inside. Jason stood in the roofless entry, momentarily at a loss. Then he heard scrambling and puffing noises from his left. He spun in that direction, following Jaina, who'd heard them first. Two fallen Duracrete slabs lay on the floor. He saw a gap between them, wide enough to squeeze through. The scrambling sounds were coming from down there.
"Jason?"
his mother's voice called.
"Jaina?" "Coming."
Jaina dropped to hands and knees beside the gap, slipped in feet first, then vanished. Jason followed, dropping into darkness. He almost pitched forward, but someone caught him.
"Thanks,"
he puffed. His mom's voice answered.
"Go. Hurry."
Jaina shuffled forward. He imitated her gait to keep from tripping on fallen stones. The passage dropped steadily, toward a dim glow on rough-cut rock. Jaina rounded the corner first. Jason followed. He thought he heard Leia behind them. In a sizable room at the T-junction of two tunnels, 20 Rin huddled. Some wore blue Selkor flight suits under their culottes and vests, their faces almost humorously stubble-covered. A pair of glow lamps threw faint shadows on the rocky walls. Up the right branch, he heard muffled voices and saw a longer lineup of faces, many shapes, shades, and sizes, disappearing in a dark distance. The digging noises came from up the T's other branch. At the junction, Han stood next to another Rin in Selkor blue, draped with culottes.
"Romani?"
Jason murmured, not quite sure.
"Hey, Baldy."
"Yep," Romani's voice. Han stepped to Leia's side. The flap of his battered leather helmet dangled alongside his chin. "End of the line, for the moment." Leia pulled away, glowering at Jason.
"There's a tunnel punched through to the old mines. From the admin building,"
Han raised a hand. "This one's almost through, and the Vong are more likely headed there. I'm in charge of this group. They've been running chewers down here day and night. Only about 4 meters to go. But if we run machinery now, we'll bring sacrifice hunters down on our heads."
Leia glanced up the tunnel. "Yes, but we were using the mining laser. It's on a repulsor sled. And I've got a Goku transmitter set up over there, patched through to a surface antenna. We could have transmitted out over there."
So that was why she'd kept it guarded. "Want me to go back for the laser?" Jason offered.
"No,"
said Leia. "And Han." "Now it's pick work." Han jerked his head up the left branch. "We're taking shifts. We'll be through in an hour. Maybe two." She sank onto a rock pile.
"I can't sit and wait that long," she muttered. "Did you hear, Han? They got the crawlers. All three."
"I heard." Han looked away. Jason thought he'd seen a furry ghost peer out through his eyes.
"But Luke and Mara are topside," Leia reported, "with Anakin. They'll give us an escort-out system if we can get these people to ships. And I need someone on that Goku link."
Jason nodded. Along one wall of this stone chamber, the Rin had piled water containers and crates labeled travel biscuits. Among the refugees, mostly shaved, but some as hairy as ever, he spotted two human families. A huddle of Vors, too. As usual, the mothers held their children close, away from the Rin. But this time, they'd trusted the Rin with their lives. Abruptly, he missed someone. "Where's Rhonda?"
"He didn't follow us?"
Leia asked.
"Frankly, I wasn't watching him. Bespican will keep an eye on him."
"I don't even care,"
Jaina said, and no one contradicted her. Jason edged toward Han and Droma, who were talking with Metsa.
"From the other end," Metsa said, "we've traced a route to the Selkor ship lot.
The minute we break through this rock, there are people on the other end who can get us to a transport. Thanks to Leia's map.
Map? Jason asked.
Of the mines. From the Duro's archives.
Leia raised a datapad.
Listen, Han. Out below the bluffs, just out of the marshy area, we did some camouflaging ourselves, weeks ago. We've still got one of the 5 big haulers that brought in almost everything for our original building site. It's ungainly, but it made hyperspace getting here. It'd hold about 2,000, according to my figures.
Han sat down on the floor beside her. What's wrong with it? Why didn't Selcor take it back? Why didn't it take off already?
Jason watched his mom squint, frown, and shake her head. I don't remember. I'm sorry. 3PO would know.
He's on the Falcon, Han said.
Can we comlink him?
You can try, Han said, but I've got him running pre-flight. I'll check out the hauler. What did you do, bury it? Leia nodded.
Piled harvest debris on top. Our scanners would find it in a heartbeat, but the Yuuzhan Vong might not have thought to look down there by the bluffs. And we know they don't have the technology.
They've got technology, sweetheart. They just build it in different ways.
Maybe, she said with exaggerated patience. They won't have found it yet. I don't know. But it'd be a lot faster to get there above ground than by following this.
She brandished her datapad map of the mines.
Skulking! Our specialty! Droma put in.
Han broke a lopsided smile. Not to mention ship repair. Okay, Metza, Romani. Droma and I are going to go check out a hauler. As soon as the pick people break through, start people moving through the mines toward the bluffs, and station someone at Leia's transmitter, but watch those side tunnels.
Right, Jaina put in. Numanor could still be down here, and if he is, he could greeny trap more ceilings.
A few refugees stared up at the stone overhead. All expression faded from Leia's face.
A couple more hours, you said, till they're through?
Metza nodded. Leia stood up and brushed rock dust from the seat of her Selcor coveralls.
Almost midnight, she said. There's some time.
For what? Han demanded. Hey, Leia, stay right here. I just found you. I want to find you again when I get back.
Leia compressed her lips. Thanks, she said. Really, Han. Thank you. But you're right. You're in charge of this group, and I left something important over at admin.
Han scowled.
Numanor led Savang La toward the laboratory-built thing, taking such obvious pleasure in walking unmasked that the War Master briefly wondered what it would be like to live most of his life in an infidel's guise, and pitied him. They strode up the sandy main road between hideously ugly constructs, past a three-sided built thing filled with monstrous machinery. Skowru and Tuskart, the huge beater and biter creatures he'd ordered released, attacked the nearest wall. This symbiotic pair could destroy artificial constructs within minutes. As soon as his own energy-creating creatures nested down and started to feed, he would put Tuskart and Skowru to work on whatever abomination the infidels used to fuel the overhead lamps. Savang La turned to an aide.
Dig the pit here, he ordered.
A contingent of warrior escorts fell out of the group. Near the dome's north edge, Numanor led him into a construct shaped like one of their ugly bricks. In the main hall, he heard sloshing and clanking noises.
My co-workers, Numanor said proudly. When I unmasked, I told them that those whom you found at work, helping remove poisons from the planet, would be specially honored.
All accepted,
Nomanor blinked his genuine eye.
Two refused to work any further, he admitted, even when I offered them full honor and amnesty.
Amnesty.
The Tizo worm in Savang La's ear didn't translate anything he could comprehend.
What is this?
Anor smiled.
A word like peace, with two meanings. They define it in a way we do not. Something like mercy.
The Tizo worm didn't translate that either.
Explain mercy.
Numanor paused at the entry to a room built around a long table. Savang La saw two infidels seated inside, wearing spotted white gowns.
To the infidels,
Numanor answered.
It seems generous to let them escape destiny.
It is not possible to escape destiny. Death is inevitable. How it is faced, that is all important.
Incredible though that may seem, they do not understand.
Savang La shook his head.
Then we will give your co-workers better than they deserve, as thanks for their tireless efforts.
You speak my thoughts,
Numanor said.
Perhaps some will volunteer to assist with our research?
There were never enough volunteers for that noble work, but his staff had brought the requisite planters and coral seeds.
I offered that option. Sadly, all declined. Perhaps having directed research makes them reluctant to contribute as participants.
Savang La shrugged.
Then we shall consecrate this building for your future use.
He turned to his black-robed priestess.
Vecta?
The hunched older woman had followed them, leading her ritual musicians. She stepped forward, carrying a translucent bivalve shell against her robes. Savang La reached inside, wriggling his fingers, calling one of the Tikkun creatures to his hand. He felt the delicate touch of a furless nose, then the warmth of furry coils wrapping around his wrist. He drew out his arm with the crimson Tikkun coiled around it. Master Shapers had recently created the species, responding to the need for quick, efficient, but spiritually significant individual sacrifices. From another aid, the priestess took a wad of tishwi leaves. She arranged them in a water basin, then held a flint spark against them and dropped them into the basin to smolder.
Bring the first researcher,
Savang La said,